Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
On today's episode, episode number 85, entitled Not Giving a Fuck, we chat with best-selling author and life coach, Mark Manson.
All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is the one and only Mark Manson. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
It's good to be here, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, dude. I've been a fan of your work for a long time. I've been reading your blog for years now. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to have you on. I know a lot of our listeners, actually. I have a couple groups and stuff I'm in, so a lot of listeners were excited when I said I'd have Mark Manson on. I had a couple good questions from them.
Cool. Sounds good.
So I actually, a question of my own. Were you in the book The Game?
No.
Okay, that was a couple years before you.
Yeah, I read The Game. That's kind of what got me into dating advice and pickup stuff. So, right.
So that totally kind of, I mean, me and you actually have a similar sort of story, I guess, background. We're like, we're sort of recovering pickup artists to turn dating coaches.
Yeah.
So when did you actually start, I guess, your kind of life journey?
You mean in terms of, like, self-development?
Yeah, in terms of, like, going out and kind of learning pickup and then dating and kind of other skills like that.
Okay. So, I mean, I was always into self-help type stuff, even when I was a teenager, and I read a lot of, like, psychology. And, but I found The Game. I had a really awful breakup when I was 21. It was kind of like, it was like a perfect storm. I got horribly dumped by my girlfriend and I turned 21 years old and I found The Game like all at the same time. And so the result, as you can imagine, was like me going to bars 5 nights a week for about a year. But yeah, so I found all that stuff when I was 21. And I mean, at the time I was still in school and I just wanted to party a lot, meet girls, and I never like the pickup stuff, it never really worked that well for me. I always found it very weird, like using lines, and I just didn't really like it. But I liked what I liked was like the sense of community. There was actually a community of guys in Boston that I would hang out with. And so I don't know. It was like the first time in my life that I felt like I kind of like had a group of guy friends that were in the same place that I was and understood the same problems that I was going through. And that was incredibly valuable. But so I did a few years like that, and then I guess I always find this really funny in hindsight, but I became what was like considered quote unquote successful. Which basically meant that, like, I had sex. And so guys started asking me for advice. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll, like, start a blog or something. I was starting to get into internet business at that time. So I was like, cool, I'll start a blog and see what happens. And that eventually led me down the road to, like, being a dating coach and then kind of setting off on my own a little bit after that.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty funny. I guess you were in college then, right, in Boston, and you were kind of doing all this stuff, huh?
Yeah, I was when I found it, and and then I started my website and my business after I got out of school, so like 2008, 2009.
Okay, cool. And what year was this then that you kind of started on this path? Was it 2005?
2005, 2006.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
Just kind of a frame of reference.
Yeah.
And I guess you kind of stumbled into, sleeping with a lot of women, and that's, you know, pretty cool and awesome for a few years, like, you know, a lot of young guys want. And but I guess you kind of realized that, you know, sleeping with women and having a lot of sex would
you know, hot girls is kind of not fulfilling at the end of the day.
Yeah. It was cool. Like, this is a funny thing. When I was in school, it was awesome. Because when you're in school, like, as long as you show up and take the test and, like, make a decent grade, nobody really cares what you do. Like, there's no expectations for what you do. And so that was great. While I was like, cool, I'll just, like, get decent grades and then party and chase girls all the time. But once I got out of school, it wasn't really cool anymore because suddenly I'm like, I'm unemployed and I'm sleeping on my friend's couch and I'm completely broke, but I'm still going out and like chasing girls 3-4 times a week. And that's when it started to occur to me that like, this might not be totally healthy.
So what kind of led you, I guess, to writing the book Models? As I know, it's kind of one of the, I guess, most popular books in sort of the pickup artist dating community now. It really took off, and I know a lot of my audience and listeners kind of love that book. What led you to writing that book, and I guess at what point did you write it?
So I started coaching like 2008, 2009, and at first I was just trying to make kind of a name for myself, like get some attention from outside of Boston. And so I traveled to a number of conferences, and it was a really bad experience. Well, that said, so there are two things kind of going on at the same time here. One is that like I started to become just very unhappy in my personal life, because like you said, it's like just chasing girls year after year. Like, it's not fulfilling. It's something that's cool to learn how to do, but if you make it the focal point of your life, like, you quickly become a pretty miserable person. So around this time, I started like dating one girl in Boston and just trying to focus on my business. And I was kind of like fed up with the whole like go out and get laid all the time thing. And then on the business side, I was trying to build a name for myself. So I started going out to a bunch of these conferences and speaking. And it was a little bit upsetting. And what was upsetting was just a lot of the things that were said about, I'm not going to like name any name. I mean, it was just pretty pervasive back then. Like, the attitude towards women that people in the industry had, I thought was very toxic and unhealthy. I found as a coach, I found the expectations put on me by the guys who were there to be kind of fucked up. Like, it was like this weird version of prostitution where guys were like, well, I'm giving you money, so you need to like go have sex with a girl. And I'm like, that's really weird. Like, this is not cool. On a variety of levels, you know? And so I kind of hit this point by 2010. I kind of hit this point where I was like, I can't do this. Like, I need to find, like, this is not healthy, basically. And so I started asking myself, like, what would a healthy version of pickup look like? Because obviously, like, I think all of us who came to this stuff, like, we had very good intentions. You know, it's like we were frustrated with our personal lives. We were frustrated with our romantic lives. We wanted to be better men. But we had no idea how. And I think the pickup artist thing really arose out of a lot of cultural scripts that had been around for decades. You know, it's like growing up, like, we were always taught by our culture that, like, you know, sex is something you have to work for, and like women are untrustworthy, and how big of a man you are is determined by, you know, how much validation you can get from girls, and all these really unhealthy things. And the pickup community kind of just assumed that that was the correct solution to men who wanted to improve themselves. And so it took me a while, but I started to realize that, you know, we need to like take a further step back and say, look, a lot of these pressures and assumptions that we have about women and sex and who we are as men are probably really damaging. And there needs to be like a much healthier model to follow and to look up to. So that slowly became models. And it was, I was experimenting with a lot of these ideas. So I was doing a lot of coaching in 2010. And I was, it was funny because back when I started coaching, I did kind of the classic, like, you know, put guys in a seminar and then take them out and like approach and do all like the typical boot camp type stuff that you read about in the game. Mm-hmm. By 2010, my coaching, it was like 90% of it was just, I would sit down with a guy at dinner and we would talk for like 4 hours about his life and his family and his emotional issues. And like, if they had been in a marriage or a previous relationship, we would talk about that. Because what I started to realize is that all these, like, what men perceived as attraction issues, like, I'm not attractive to women, usually what it was is there was some sort of insecurity inside themselves that was just driving them to be very needy and unattractive. And so doing all this coaching, like, that eventually became the ideas that are in models. When I finally sat down to write it, I wrote it very quickly. It came out in probably 2 or 3 months.
That's pretty cool, man. It seems like you kind of banged it out and kind of went all in for it just to make sure it you know, was complete. I know a lot of people kind of have a lot of projects they want to start and never really get off to doing it.
Yeah, and it's the funny thing about models was I wrote it so quickly, one, because I had been thinking and talking about the ideas in it for so long, but the other reason too was I reached a point where it was like, I don't want to be a part of this industry unless it can be like emotionally healthy. And so models was kind of like my last ditch effort. I mean, I went into writing models like, this one of two things is going to happen. I'm going to be called like a beta pussy loser for like telling men to open up and be vulnerable, or it's going to change the industry. And but I was completely prepared to just walk away. If the book failed and people didn't like it and nothing changed, I was completely prepared to like go back to Boston and get a day job or something, or start another business probably.
Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, I mean, it worked out pretty well for you, man. It's pretty successful, and you know, it's one of the best dating books I think out there.
Yeah, it exceeded all expectations. Actually, it was funny. The day it passed the game on Amazon, I was like, it was a big moral victory for me.
That's funny too. It's almost like, you know, it's the same concept, same kind of topics you're talking about, but it's a totally different approach to some of the ideas and ideology in the game. So it's pretty cool that you were actually able to pass it in that way and kind of give the other side to things. I know that one of the quotes from the book is, seduction is a purely emotional process and not a logical one. Can you just kind of explain that real quick?
So ultimately, like, sexual attraction it's something that's felt. It's not something that is decided upon. You know, this is all, like, there's the popular saying, I think it comes from Double Your Dating. He says, attraction's not a choice. And I think that has been misconstrued by some people in some unhealthy ways. But I think what David D'Angelo, or the actual name is Eben Pagan, I think what he actually meant by that, which I agree with, is that attraction, sexual attraction, romance, it happens on an unconscious level. It's not something that you like logically decide, like, oh, I'm going to be attracted to this woman now, or a woman doesn't sit there and be like, oh, I'm going to be attracted to this man now. It's a feeling. And therefore, the way you reach that point has to be emotional. It has to be emotional stimulation. It's not because you said the right things, or you're wearing the right shirt, or you're like mentioning the right, you know, resume characteristics. It's a purely emotional dynamic. And because it's emotional, it's going to be different for every single man and woman. And it's not only is it going to be different, but it's also going to be unpredictable. So the skill, the quote unquote skill and pickup, is not so much like learning lines and jokes and stuff like that. That's not pickup skill. That's social skills. That's like just learning how to talk to people. If there's any such thing as like a seduction skill, it's being really good at understanding people's emotions and understanding your own emotions.
Hey man, are you looking to improve your life in a number of very important ways? Do you want to improve, say, your dating, your health, your fitness, your business, your confidence, your social skills, your style, any one of these areas? If so, the best way to do this right now is to join our Facebook group. Join the Elite Man Networking Group right now. It's the best way to build a sense of community online. It's so tough nowadays to feel like you're connected to like-minded people. Joining this Facebook group solves that problem. We have hundreds of awesome guys, speakers, thought leaders, life coaches, dating coaches, business leaders, health and fitness experts, bloggers, podcasters, and just regular awesome dudes like yourself on this group right now. Sharing their incredible insights, advice, tips, strategies, and techniques to mastering all sorts of really important areas of your life. If you're serious about improving your life, go right now to Facebook and type in Elite Man Networking Group in the search bar. Type it up right now and join the group. I'll approve the request as soon as possible. It's a closed group, which means it's pretty intimate and not everyone can join. But right now, if you log on, I'll have you added within the same day. I want to get as many awesome guys like yourself into the group as possible. We have such a great community of leaders, speakers, coaches, influencers, people to help share their insights with you and to help share great ideas with each other, to just build each other up and build incredible relationships with one another and help each other become the best people we can be. So join this group right now if you're looking to connect with other incredible men just like you and become the best man you can be. Join now. Go on Facebook and type in Elite Man Networking Group. Okay, back to the show now.
Mark, so sort of moving on a little bit, I don't know if you read Neil Strauss's latest book, The Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Yep.
Pretty good book overall. I think it was kind of, you know, he's got a good style of writing and I
like great writer.
Yeah, I like some of the concepts in it. One of the things he mentions is that he's always had a trouble with kind of going back and forth. Like he'll be in a relationship. And then he wants to be single. Like even if he has like an amazing girl, you know, he kind of longs to be single and go out and kind of pick up girls still and meet new girls and have sex with new girls. But then when he's single, he has a tough time with wanting to be with someone, kind of settling down, and you know, he kind of wants to keep going back and forth with that. Have you ever experienced that yourself?
Totally.
I think I have too, man. A lot of us,
yeah,
kind of have that. I just kind of wanted to hear your take on that and kind of what you've done to get over that.
So I think what it is it's a need for intimacy. It's there's a need for intimacy that's going unmet. So when you're single and you're like dating all these people and it's fun, you're having these cool experiences, your logical reaction to that is like to find somebody special that you can like have that deep emotional dive with. And so you look for that. And then when you're in a relationship and you're not getting your intimacy needs met, your logical reaction is like, well, apparently I'm with the wrong person. I need to be out like meeting all these other people. Like, what if there's somebody that I could have even more with? The funny thing is, though, is I think if you're constantly feeling, you know, so what Neil describes with himself, and I experienced this with myself for many years, if you're always feeling like your intimacy needs are not met when you're single and your intimacy needs are not met when you're in a relationship, the only thing that those two things have in common is you. And it basically, I would say it comes down to like your own ability to be intimate. And I think a lot of men who are kind of driven, I won't even say men, I'll just say people. A lot of people who are driven to be very promiscuous, struggle with opening themselves up to that sort of intimacy, and so they feel this constant like grass is always greener problem in their lives. And the way I eventually got over that was I just got over my own fear of intimacy. Part of it helped that I met the right girl, but even like I'm married now, but like even with my wife, it took like 2 years for me to like just calm the fuck down and open myself up to the point where it's like I felt very comfortable where I was, and like that for the first time in my life, that desire or that feeling that like I was missing out with other women went away.
I guess by intimacy, can you just kind of define that exactly? Are you talking more of like sex connection intimacy, or just intimacy like opening up emotionally on all fronts?
Yeah, it's an emotional thing. So, and it comes back to what I talk about in models, which I guess is vulnerability. Sexual intimacy, like sex, is one form of vulnerability, but I would say it's in many ways it's a very shallow one. It's more like a physical vulnerability, and a lot of people are able to be sexually vulnerable without being emotionally vulnerable, like they're able to kind of like block off their emotions. What was happening with me was like there was just, oh, it's really hard to put words around this. There was a certain portion of me that was just emotionally unavailable. So like I was, a lot of my emotions were available to the women I was with, but there was a portion that I didn't open up for anybody. And again, it's an unconscious thing. Like you're not totally in control of it. Like you don't realize you're doing it kind of until afterwards. But, there was still part of me that was like protecting himself. And I think part of my brain's way of protecting itself was telling itself that, oh, dude, you need to go like fuck other girls. And that was actually a defense mechanism, and probably had been my entire life. And so, yeah, working through that was very difficult. But eventually, you know, I think I was able to let it go. Like I said, it took years with my wife, but like eventually it kind of hit a point where it was like, okay, like I actually don't need to go fuck other girls. Like I'm actually very, very happy where I am. And, but it's like that's a very vulnerable place to be. Like it requires a lot of trust, in getting over a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It actually makes sense that, you know, kind of just thinking about it, logically, it's like you're holding on to things, insecurities or whatever, different things you kind of keep to yourself. And even, you know, some of your closest friends and family, like there's still parts of, I think, every person that they don't want to share with people. It's just kind of like a side that you don't want to reveal. But when you can find, and I guess a lot of people, whatever, you know, insecurities that they hold in, a lot of people kind of take that out in a number of different ways, whether they're alcoholics or gamblers or they do drugs, or maybe it's, you know, guys like me and you, it might be women, you know,
yeah,
sex with a lot of women. But when you find someone you can kind of open up to and trust and let your guard down with, you know, completely, I think it kind of takes away that need to go out and do these things.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because it's like it's such an easy thing to say, but like it's really like I still don't know how to actually describe it.
Yeah,
it's such a deeply personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's a topic for another book one day.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting topic, man. I'd love to hear more of your thoughts sometime on that. Sort of moving forward. Mark, what is it about your writing, do you think? Like, what's the number one thing about your writing that you think resonate or, you know, makes people love, you know, your style of writing? You have an awesome blog. You know, your book's phenomenal. Your next book looks incredible, too. What is it about your writing that, you know, resonates with everyone?
I think what people like, at least this is, like, the most common compliment I get from people, is that it's just no bullshit. And I use that word specifically because it's more than just being honest. Like there's a lot of honest writing out there, but like it's no bullshit in that it's like there's no sugarcoating. Like there's no, like most personal development stuff tries to make you feel good while it's telling you. Like let's, if you back up for a second, like if we're being really, really honest, any sort of personal growth or dealing with your life problems, it's going to be painful and it's going to suck. And I think most self-help material tries to get around that by coding it in like very fluffy, flowery language. You know, it's like, like whatever it is, but it, and I just don't do that. In fact, I find like a weird kind of beauty in just talking about pain in its like most simple form. And I guess you could say that like my way of kind of making it flowery or whatever is just using humor, but I don't ever try to like mask like what it is. Like it's pain, it sucks, like nobody wants it, but that's just life, like you have to deal with it. And I think people find that, especially in our culture today, so much revolves around just like quick fixes and feeling good all the time. Like I think that's a breath of fresh air for people, whether it's I'm talking about dating, girls, happiness, job satisfaction, like whatever. Like I think in every realm people just find that to be very refreshing.
You know, just reading some of your blog articles and going over some of the work you've done, I like the fact that it's real and, like you said, it's honest and totally raw. Like you said, you don't sugarcoat things. You kind of tell it how it is. And I think people like to actually hear that. As much as some people like, you know, the fluffy version of stuff or like to think that things are a lot easier, life is a lot easier than it is, I think, you know, just kind of realizing that what you're telling is the truth, you know, resonates with them in that way.
Yeah, and one thing that's always surprised me is true both in the pickup industry and also now in the self-help industry, but like in the pickup industry, I wrote models and I'm like, all right, like 80%, 90% of this industry is all, at least at the time, it was all based on like gimmicks and tactics and manipulation and like quasi-sexist beliefs about women. And I was like, all right, I'm going to write a book that's about honesty, vulnerability, opening yourself up as a man and like taking responsibility for being such like an unattractive asshole. And and I expected that. And when I wrote it, I was like, okay, there's got to be this whole audience of men out there who want to improve their dating lives, but they're disgusted with pickup. And so I'm going to write for them. But what surprised me is that like all the pickup guys were like, hey, this is awesome, I like this too. And they actually read both. And the same thing is happening in the self-help. I have an article on my website called The Staggering Bullshit of the Secret. And it just like shits all over positive thinking for like 1500 words. And I get emails from people who are like, oh, I love positive thinking and I love The Secret, but I love your stuff too. And I'm just like, all right, sure. Like I'll take, if everybody likes it, that's fine. You know, like I'll take whatever I can get.
That's pretty cool, man. I think I've come across that article at some point. How long ago did you write? A couple years ago?
I think, yeah, like early 2015.
Yeah, I definitely read that at some point.
Yeah, it doesn't mince words.
That's awesome, man. And kind of segueing, I guess, into your next book, which doesn't mince words as well. And I read this article, I don't know, probably a year ago or so when it first came out, or I don't know when it first came out, but I read it about a year ago. So The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Yeah.
That was the blog post. And you obviously, it's an incredible blog post for anyone who hasn't read just the blog post itself, but I think you've taken that idea and the concept of it and now wrote a whole book on it. Is that right?
Yeah. It's expanded upon it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Cool, man. And what is kind of the gist? I guess we'll just kind of jump right into the book. What's the gist of the book, and how'd you kind of come up with it?
So, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, it's it's a sneaky way to get people to think about their values. Which if I wrote a book about values, nobody would read it. So I needed to call it something like really exciting. And but basically what I mean by values is like what we choose to find important. And you know, one thing that was very kind of formative for me in terms of like the inspiration for it was I came out of this period, so I spent most of my 20s like womanizing, chasing girls, and just being, in general, just being like way too obsessed with my sex life. And I came out of that period, like I kind of got over that. And it really just I started looking back on that period, and it was like, you know, I was very quote unquote successful, like by the standards I had set for myself. I lived like a very like successful life, but like ultimately it wasn't, like you said earlier, like it wasn't very fulfilling. And the thing that kind of hurt the most at the end of it was I realized that all these women that I thought I had these like very special experiences with, like 5 years later, like they don't care. Like nobody remembers, nobody cares. They've moved on. They've like gotten married and like bought a house or something. And like, you just never hear from them again. And so it's like all of these moments that have basically been like the most meaningful moments of my life. Nobody else thought they were meaningful. And it just was, it was a little bit of an eye opener of like my definition of success had been really flawed for myself. And as a result, even despite the fact that I had achieved that success, because my definition of success was bad, it just felt very empty. And so that got me thinking a lot about like how people define success for themselves and how this really like affects everything. You know, if your definition of success for yourself is like making $1 billion, like that is going to affect everything in your life. Whether you achieve it or not, it's going to affect your goals, it's going to affect your habits, it's going to affect your relationships, it's going to affect what you do with your life. And this to me was just like really fascinating. And I ultimately kind of came to the conclusion that when we're talking about personal development, or when we're talking about like people's life problems or like why they suffer, ultimately, like everything comes back to their values in some way. Like, how are they defining success for themselves? How are they deciding to measure themselves? And because if you pick a poor metric to measure yourself by, then you're just setting yourself up for misery and unhappiness. So that's really what the book is about. It's kind of a journey through that and not just like my own experiences, but also just kind of like the train of thought philosophically that follows from that. And the subtitle of the book is A Counterintuitive Approach to Living a Good Life. And on the way during that train of thought, like I come to kind of like some counterintuitive conclusions that at least I think you don't really see in many other places.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of an example of one of the counterintuitive things you mentioned?
One of them is don't believe in yourself, which sounds horrible when people first hear it. But I go on. There's a whole chapter about it in the book, and it's basically. Our brains are really, really faulty and biased, and our memories are horrible. Like, if you dig into the psychological research, like, our brains are just, they're really bad at reality. Like, they're just very, like, whether it's, like, predicting the future or understanding our own emotions or remembering things correctly or making judgment, like, value judgments, like, our brains are just really, really bad. And most And the thing is that like the pretty much like what we consider like the most evil things that happen in the world, they come from a sense of certainty in people, and they come from people, you know, to use an extreme example that everybody uses. If you think of like Hitler and the Nazis, like it came from a certainty about like racial superiority. If you think of like I use an example, I was cyber stalked by a woman for a while, and I use her as an example in the book of like she had this like perfect certainty that God had decided that she and I were supposed to be together, and it's like it just it, and it was like making us both feel awful, and so I kind of argue like if our brains are so faulty and if certainty kind of leads to everything that's bad, then we should just practice, like get very good at practicing being skeptical of ourselves and our own beliefs and always being unsure. I mean, if you look at something just as simple as like being afraid to talk to a girl, like why is a guy afraid to talk to a girl? Well, it's because he thinks that she's going to make fun of him or she's not going to like him or he's going to embarrass himself. Like, well, where does that come from? It comes from certain beliefs. He's certain that she's not going to like him or that being rejected is embarrassing. He's certain that his friends are going to care. He's certain that it's going to make him less of a man. It's like if you remove all these certainties, if you just kind of live with the fact that, like, you know what, I don't even know, like maybe her rejecting me would be the best thing that ever happened in my life, like you have no idea. It's once you like kind of are able to sit in that uncertainty and live with it, I think it opens, it removes a lot of anxiety and opens oneself up to like a lot more action.
Yeah, and certainly I think removes the chance of kind of believing in something and it being wrong. And I think people kind of who think that you know, there is all this certainty or that there's all this these rights and wrongs in life, kind of close themselves off to different beliefs and different ideas and kind of understanding different theories or whatever that they come across in life. You know, kind of reminds me of and I'm an independent. I definitely have beliefs. I share beliefs from Republicans and Democrats, but it's like you see like this diehard Republican or this diehard liberal, and it's like you guys are just completely missing the point here, where it's like,
yeah,
you're totally closing yourself off from what the other people are thinking. If you actually put yourself in someone else's shoes from an opposing view, you can really understand where they're coming from. Whether you agree with them or not, you can get a better understanding of the entire concept if you kind of open yourself up. And I totally can understand what you're saying.
Yeah, people put themselves in bubbles. And because it's comfortable and it protects them, but it's not healthy. It doesn't promote growth.
Yeah, I think in the long run, it's kind of you know, definitely not a healthy way to live. Mark, just a couple more questions, man, and then we'll sort of wrap things up. What does happiness look like for you? Like, what is your key to happiness in life?
Oh, man.
Pretty profound question, I know.
Yeah, I know. And it's like my answer is not going to mean a damn thing. I mean, happiness for me looks like, you know, waking up at 11, writing all day, and either playing video games with my friends or or like going out and having a really nice dinner. Like, I mean, what I define, but I mean, to get a little more philosophical, well, I mean, and the cool thing is that happiness evolves. You know, it's like my answer to that question would have been completely different 5 years ago, mm-hmm. or 10 years ago. But the way I put it in my book is that happiness is happiness essentially comes from like solving problems. And like life is full of problems, and when we solve them, it makes our life better. It makes us happy, and like we need to solve those problems because solving problems is what gives our life meaning. If we just avoid our problems all the time, then it's like we're basically just making the problems worse. And avoiding problems, that, like, it feels very good in the short term, but it just makes the problems worse in the long run. So, and I dive in, I kind of get into more detail about that, but yeah, basically happiness is solving problems.
Cool. I like that, man. What is your most proudest accomplishment to date?
I would definitely put models up there. Mm-hmm. It's achieved more success than I had ever dreamed of. I mean, I could probably, we'll see how this book does, but I mean, even if this book, I mean, this book will probably sell way more copies than models, but the popularity and the influence that models has had on that industry, like, I'm very, very, very proud of.
Cool, man. Or like that, yeah. And I'm sure, just judging by you know, how many interviews and press you're doing lately, dude, it's gonna crush it.
Yeah, I hope so.
Sort of final question: what do you think of yourself as being, like, a modern day philosopher? I know, thinking back, you know, over time, you read some of the writings by, like, Plato or Marcus Aurelius or Sun Tzu. Then you have modern day people like Robert Greene or Neil Strauss. Like, how do you consider yourself as being, like, a modern day philosopher? Do you like that concept?
I like it. I don't know if I have enough confidence to call myself that, but I'll totally let other people call me that. I'm totally, like, I'm not gonna argue.
Awesome, dude. I like that, man. I mean, I kind of just came up with that, you know, just thinking about some of the people, some of the big self-help, I mean I hate that word, but I guess self-help,
yeah,
people and just kind of life coaches that really make an impact on people. And I think it's like, we have a lot of great philosophers in this day and age. It's like, everywhere you look, it's easy to kind of you know, just see awesome examples of people making the world such a, I guess, more developed and kind of better place.
Yeah.
Mark, what is your final send-off message you'd like to leave our audience, and then also a place our listeners can check out more about you?
Last send-off message, there's a quote that I love that I pull out all the time in situations like this. Freud once said that one day in retrospect, your struggles will... Oh, fuck, now I'm fucking it up. great, now I gotta Google this, hold on. One day in retrospect, the years of struggle will strike you as the most beautiful. I love that quote because it's not only is it like one of those, like, old motivational quotes that you can put in front of a sunset and it'll make you feel better, but it's like, I think it's we need struggle in our life to make meaning. And so whenever things are hard or difficult, it's important to remind oneself that, like, you know what, one day I'll look back on this and I'll be glad I did all this. And so that's, like, I don't know. I just find it to be, like, really profound. People can find me at markmanson.net, and the book is called Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. It's out September 13th. It's in all bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere, so check it out.
Awesome, man. Great quote, too. It's sounds like a pretty intense Freudian quote. appreciate the interview, Mark. It was great to meet you, man. And, guys, check out that book when you get a chance. Should be out when the podcast drops. So when you guys are listening to this, go ahead and check out the link on Amazon and also Mark's site. Mark, thanks again, man, and take care, bro. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man Podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes,
If you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Alright guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.